Hey guys, I am so excited for Ethos Training Systems to be the official sponsor for my podcast, Getting Zen with Gen Z. They are located at 314 West Institute Place, Chicago, and are Chicago's first sustainable strength, conditioning, and mobility group training facility. Their three main focuses are fat loss and conditioning, strength development, and injury prevention and mobility. Be sure to sign up for their new client promo at ethostrainingshy.com and make them your number one for all your training needs. Follow them on Instagram at ethostrainingshy for awesome tips and updates. Getting Zen with Gen Z. Empowering, motivating, and inspiring you to live your happiest, healthiest life. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Getting Zen with Gen Z. This week, I have Dr. John Duffy with me as a guest, who I've actually been waiting for this opportunity to have him here and interview him for a little while now. And Dr. Duffy and I have never met, maybe in passing at WGN, but I had reached out to him because I felt this connection. I felt like we would have some great conversation, and I'm going to list all the fabulous things that you are, all your titles and the things that you've done in your career. But he's a clinical psychologist, best-selling author, certified life coach, parenting and relationship expert. You have two podcasts, correct?
Correct, yes.
Better with, I believe, your wife.
My wife, Julie.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
that's very cool. And On Purpose with Heidi Stevens.
Yes.
That's actually a WGN podcast.
Yes.
Correct. So I feel like, you know, there were so many topics we could talk about. But I want to thank you, first of all, for being here.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm so excited. But I really wanted to talk about the anxieties and stresses that I think teenagers and kids go through these days. I've had so many of my clients, and I feel like this topic has just come up so much, where I've overheard all the pressures that I feel like kids have to go through.
Yeah.
Be it between, you know, workload and just going through maybe situations of bullying, just different stress and anxieties where I feel like there's just so many more emotions that kids have to go through. And, you know, with social media, I feel like that's such a, you know, big factor in that. Whereas, you know, when we were kids, like, I feel like, you know, yeah, we went through a lot of different issues and stresses and self-esteem issues, and we're self-conscious. But not having social media, I feel like that changes the game big time.
For sure. Yes.
So I wanted to have you here to talk about kind of your insight and what you tell people to help parents and kids going through this, and some of the biggest pressures that you think kids are going through these days.
Yeah. I'm glad we have some time here because there are
I feel like this could be a really big topic.
And you're right. There has been this precipitous rise mm-hmm. in anxiety and depression, mostly stress based in kids. I work with teenagers, but kids as young as 6, 7, 8 years old
wow.
who are exposed to so much stimuli, so much data. If you picture, we can all picture a 2-year-old in a stroller with an iPad, mm-hmm. right? And
yeah.
this didn't used to happen, right? So kids are already inundated with social media and the idea of it. We take pictures mm-hmm. of babies. Like my wife and I saw, you know, a baby being recorded at length at lunch the other day, and we were thinking, here's what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. That child right now, an image is being curated for that baby online.
Right.
And 15 years from now, mom and dad are going to be saying, why are you curating that stupid online image? You know, like, that makes me crazy. And yet we're doing this for
our kids.
We're
it, right.
showing them how to do this, right?
Exactly.
And it becomes part of our image as mom and dad.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, kids have what a brilliant 16-year-old girl I worked with called identity traffic problems.
Oh, wow.
And so her point was, I have an identity that on Instagram. I have an identity on my fake Instagram that's different than the regular Instagram.
Oh my gosh, Instagram.
Everybody's got a back Instagram that their parents are not allowed to see.
Okay. Oh, so, wow. Okay. See, I'm not a parent, so yes, this is going to be very interesting for me to hear about all this stuff.
Yeah, and a Snapchat identity, and one with friends, and one with, you know, the nerds and the cool kids, and mom and dad, and the teachers. And she said, sadly, she said, at the end of the night, she'll watch Parks and Rec or The Office until she is exhausted because she doesn't want her real identity to call her out. So she will spend all this time curating all these online identities, gaining all these likes, trying to build some kind of self-worth all day long. But she doesn't want to hear herself say, "You're a fraud. You're making this all up,
oh,
and these are
gosh.
All false identities, and your real identity is the one that would call you out." So you have to exhaust yourself at the end of the day. That's the kind of stress that kids are under, and she distilled that down beautifully. But kids across the board feel something along those lines, on top of academic stressors that most of us have no idea what they're like. It's so much harder now to follow these kind of narrow definitions of success that we've created for our kids, right? Where it's like, if you need to follow this path and get into these schools and get these scores on the ACT, and anything that's weird or offbeat doesn't fit on the resume. So if you have a really talented kid who's in music or a painter, or, you know, there's a lot of talent left on the table because we're sticking with this really narrow definition of what works.
I feel like just a lot of, like, when I see parents and students come in, you know, clients at my spa and stuff, it's just hearing them talk about, like, all the homework and the workload they have, and just the exams and the papers and, you know, applying for all different colleges and everything that they have to have. It's like, when do these kids have time to be kids?
Right.
Do they?
They not only do they not have time to be kids, they have no downtime. They're always, because of social media and the 4.5 hours or 5 hours of homework every night, they're always on the grid. They're never off, you know, even in the middle of the night, because, hey, my phone's right next to my bed. I just woke up for a minute and I want to see what time it is. And, well, I may as well check Snapchat.
Right.
And suddenly you're back
on
the grid.
You see all the notifications.
Yeah. And you're going to check.
You want to look, of course.
Right. So, and the one problem that I see is this is starting to hit kids at earlier and earlier and earlier ages. So, I wrote a book recently that will be published in a couple of months about, how the teenage years have stretched and the tween years have kind of disappeared. So kids used to have this cushion between childhood and adolescence that used to be kind of like this comfy place to mature a little bit. And now I think there's this abrupt, like, jump from and starting at like 6, 7, 8 years
early.
Old. Yes, very early.
Yeah.
So this is something I struggled with in writing the book, because I'm encouraging parents to have talks with kids about social media images, sex, drugs, all sorts of the awkward things with their 8-year-olds, because their 8-year-olds know. They know what's going on. They know what school shootings are. They have drills, active shooter drills in schools at 6. So we can't not talk to our kids about this stuff. So this idea of an innocent, comfy, cozy childhood, that doesn't happen
anymore.
It's gone.
They're just forced to learn about all these realities and kind of mature and grow up so much faster.
Exactly.
I mean, so kind of going back to the social media for a minute, I know how stressed I get. I was just having this conversation yesterday and I was like, I had to just put my phone down one day, because I do so much with, like, clients and booking and emails and social media and branding, everything on my phone.
Right. Sure.
And I'm like, I need to put this down, because I can just feel there's, like, sensory overload. My eyes are getting strained. I'm like, I just can't handle it anymore.
Right.
You know, so I kind of realize, and I'm aware of when I need to take that break and kind of, you know, turn off for a minute. But I also understand, like, the purpose of social media as far as, you know, for businesses and branding and and all of that. You know, you have to be on there, you have to be out there, you have to be engaging. But I feel like for kids and teenagers, are they really trying to build, like, so much of this identity, or is it not just for connecting with friends? I mean, is it that much of a stress that they have to kind of create this image of themselves, like at that age, like what is the purpose for them?
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying?
It's everything that you're talking about. It's identity and it's branding. I mean, you know, like you and I have
our businesses.
We're building these brands.
Yeah.
But kids are building brands too. And sometimes they build brands with these lovely agendas. Like I work with a lot of kids who suffer from depression, anxiety, or both. And sometimes their agenda is, I'm going to help eliminate the stigma. So I might put a selfie up there, but I will also put a post up there about like, you know, I feel really anxious today, you know, hashtag eliminate the stigma, you know, which is really cool. So some kids are woke. I mean, they're very aware. They're aware and they have empathy. So they develop this point of view at very young ages, which is overwhelming. And developmentally, they're not ready for any of what they're exposed to, but they develop empathy and they care. So social media is a little bit of all of that for them, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit of like, I want to connect with my friends. Please don't break my snap streaks. Do you know what snap streaks are?
No, what is that?
Okay, so on Snapchat, Snapchat is the new social media developed really to elude mom and dad, because you put something on there and it disappears almost right away.
I have Snapchat, but I never use it.
Okay, so Snapchat. If you and I would have a snap streak, if we communicated every day,
okay,
and every day we can add a day to our streak. But if you get in trouble and your mom takes your phone, our streak is broken, and that is devastating to teenagers. I mean, I cannot tell you, I'm not kidding.
Oh my
how
gosh.
Big it, like, please take away anything but the phone, mom, please, because I need to keep the streaks going. It's, so it's kind of like likes.
Okay.
You know, the way likes work and how that builds in the self-esteem.
Yes.
If I don't have 75 streaks going with a bunch of different people, I'm screwed.
Holy cannoli. Who knew you would be schooling me on like Snapchat right now and social media? All these terms.
Working with kids does keep you young.
For sure.
Keeps you very focused on the strangest things. Yes.
Wow, that's crazy. I mean, I know. I feel like that's like if you tell a kid that you're taking their phone away, that's like the end of, you know, you're like, what? No, oh, I mean.
Anything else but that.
That's like life.
Yeah. Take the car keys. I mean, literally take the car keys. I'm more free on the phone.
Oh, my
God. And I've got all these identities to curate here, you know? Super stressful.
So, I mean, I think it's amazing that kids are able to kind of have a voice through social media. There's so many, you know, there's so many pros and cons, I think, to it. And that might be a platform for them to really kind of talk about their feelings and what's going on and connect with other people.
For sure.
On that level. But I also think, I mean, I'm sure you've seen this a lot, but there has to be so much bullying that goes on also with social media.
Yeah.
And one of my clients came in the other day and her daughter was experiencing, she's, you know, going through a state of depression and she was out of school for a little while. And she just wasn't really kind of connecting with anybody on a one-on-one and you know, certain groups have kind of shunned her a little bit. But the mom was like, you know, it was different with us because it was like you could go home from school and everything was like over pretty much.
Right.
But now it continues. It's 24/7 with social media.
Absolutely.
So you can't escape it.
You're always on that grid, right? You know, and you can't escape it. And so bullying has taken on it's morphed into a whole new form online. And it reminds me of road rage. Where road rage is kind of like, you know, I don't know if you've ever had the moment. I will admit that I have. If I get cut up, you know, kind of cut off in traffic, I will pull up next to that person and, you know, I will explode, you know. That's well under control now, Jen. But
I'm glad to hear that. That's fine. It's good to admit it.
But online bullying has that kind of feeling to it where I think of a kids look each other in the eye like you and I are now. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to erase that humanity and be brutal to that person. But if you're bullying somebody online, you can kind of, you're once removed and you can justify it in a way that you never could. And certainly teenagers today never could otherwise. So the bullying is brutal. When I started this job, it was about 20 years ago, Columbine had just happened.
Oh, wow.
And so the bullies we were looking for were boys who were beating up other boys, right? Mm-hmm. Now, we're looking for anybody. We're looking for, you know, any kids who might target like the lonely kid in the cafeteria or, you know, just about anybody. The most popular preppy quarterback, head cheerleader mm-hmm. can be bullied just as readily as the geek sitting alone. You know, like nobody's immune to bullying.
Well, that's a really great point there because mm-hmm. when... You know, before I feel like it would be something a little bit more like physical or it would be like, oh, the tough person, you know, guy or girl kind of, you know, confronting you.
Yeah.
Intimidation. Yes, the intimidation for sure. But that doesn't have to happen. You mm-hmm. could really hide behind your phone or computer and send anything out to anyone.
Absolutely. I had an unnerving moment a couple of years ago where a girl said, you don't understand how powerful this can be. I can ruin a girl's life with one status update. Do you want to see? And I said, no, but she meant it. I mean, she felt like she had that power. She had enough followers. And so she knew, and she said, anybody could do it to me too. Mm-hmm. You know, so anybody can ruin anybody in just a moment. And I've worked with a lot of kids whose lives were really turned sideways by being bullied online. It's really, really harsh.
That's really like scary, like horrifying thought.
It's horrifying. And I'll make, before we make it better, let me make it more horrifying.
Yeah. Go,
when you ask a child about this, when you ask a teenager about mm-hmm. this in particular, they'll tell you, oh, it's no big deal. Yes, there's this hate page called, you know, Hate Jen Zanadia on,
oh
you know, on Instagram, but it's a joke and it's no big deal. So don't call the school and don't call the parents. Just let it be. I know those kids and it's fine. So not only you can't be outraged because you're afraid, oh, if I draw attention to this, if I let them know it's affecting me, I'm upping the ante. They're going to come at me harder.
Right.
Yeah. So
what can kids do?
Yeah.
I feel like that's a hard place to be in.
Yeah. Yeah. So what I typically encourage kids to do mm-hmm. is most kids are really empathic. And so I've worked with a few kids who've gone up to the kids who literally started the page that's about them mm-hmm. and said, that really hurts my feelings. You know, would you mind taking that down? I need you to take that down. It's because it's brutal for me. And it's a, you know, and I feel terrible about myself. Mm-hmm. And if you're willing to be that vulnerable, which is big, it's a lot to
ask. I was going to say, that takes a lot of courage.
Super.
Like, good for them. I mean, that's amazing for them to go and confront that person.
Yep, yep. And friends of kids often will do that as well. And for parents listening, I do encourage you to get involved if you know this exists for your child, because your mm-hmm. child's not going to – it's hard to advocate for yourself as a kid. So I encourage parents to be that advocate in this situation, because – the one thing we haven't talked about that is super uncomfortable and unpleasant, but on the rise, is mm-hmm. suicidality and suicidal ideation, the thought. Mm-hmm. And a lot of kids now will tell me very overtly, I have no intention of taking my life, but if it went away, if I got hit by a bus walking out the building, that would be okay. If I don't see tomorrow, that's fine. You know, so it's this kind of passive suicidal thinking. So there's some urgency in making sure your child's sense of self-worth is buoyed, you know, mm-hmm. so it's not no big deal. It's not something that we should brush off. Deal with.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We need to do something. We need to get involved.
What are some of the signs that parents should kind of look out for? I mean, I feel like there's some parents that are super involved and mm-hmm. and aware and can recognize, you know, behavior and are very connected with their child. But, you know, and even if they are or not, what are some of the things that they should look for, especially in like the rise of so much, you know, anxiety and depression?
Yeah.
Like, what are the signs that they should be looking for to start kind of getting involved or doing something?
You mentioned a friend's daughter who was reluctant to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
So that happens more and more now than it ever has before, this reluctance to go. And there's reasoning behind that. You know, mm-hmm. there's social anxiety or bullying or something, test anxiety, mm-hmm. Fear of public speaking. There's a whole bunch of things. Fear of school shootings. A whole bunch of things can play into that fear. So if your child says, I don't want to go to school, or I'm really nervous about that. If you see your child withdrawing, mm-hmm. like I'm in her room a lot alone, you know, okay. pay attention to that. If he or she speaks less, just says fewer words. And teenagers are moody and they are quiet. But if it's way beyond the pale, like if you feel like, wow, that's a dramatic change and that happened pretty quick,
mm-hmm.
even if it's a change for the positive, sometimes that's not the greatest sign. If you see something sudden, ask.
Okay.
And it's okay to ask your kid about just about anything. Mm-hmm. So parents are afraid to ask their kids specifically about, like, are you depressed? Are you anxious? Are you suicidal? Ask those questions. It is okay to ask all of them. And you are not introducing that into their vernacular by asking. Your child is
it's better
very
to
familiar.
Talk about it than
absolutely
to not.
Yes.
Because if they have those thoughts going on, or at least they, you know, I think they might realize that you're more aware as a parent,
yes.
of those topics.
Right.
And you can engage in that conversation or go to them, you know, if you need to.
Exactly. So one word you were talking about, your word is amazing, right?
Yes.
Right now.
Yes,
so my,
it is.
My word is available. I'm encouraging parents always to be available to your kids. So because parents often will tell me, well, I'll tell my kid, you know, you can talk to me about anything. And they'll say, well, I don't want to talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
And my point to those parents is, fine. That's the fact that you are present and available and not driven solely by your own fears,
mm-hmm.
then your child knows, okay, I got mom and dad to talk to if I need them. You know,
right.
And they may never take you up on it,
but, yep. they know you're there.
As long as they know you're there and in their corner, that's an ally. Mm-hmm. And kids need their parents as an ally. You know, like if you want to be part of the solution, that's the biggest part of the solution you can mm-hmm. possibly be.
Just always being there as their support.
Yep.
And just telling them, I mean, I'm sure just telling them how much you love them, that you're always there for them, you know, just so they know you're in their corner.
On the worst day when they're bugging you the most.
Right. Of course. Always. So if they don't want, you know, as you're being available to your child, what other resources, if they don't really feel comfortable talking with you,
yeah.
do you suggest, you know, you're scheduling an appointment with a therapist, or are there school counselors that are available? Like, what are some other options that kids can do? Or if there's even like peer support groups?
Yep. All of that. I mean, okay. I love all of that. If mm-hmm. if you feel like your child is suffering from anxiety, depression, then find a therapist that is familiar with those issues and works with kids your child's age, mm-hmm. for sure. But peer support groups in most high schools and middle schools now, there are peer support groups, and nobody helps kids through difficult times better than other kids. They're amazing at it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, I feel like even as adults, like it's good, you know, that it's great to be able to connect with other people that are going through similar issues or struggles.
Right.
So having kids, you know, I think realizing, you know, other people kind of have your back and are going through the same thing. Instantly, that gives you a group of people to kind of connect with.
Absolutely. And also, they're good at calling each other out. Kids are good at calling each other out, like, you know, oh, dude, that's really not that bad. You're going to be fine. You know, like, don't even worry about that. Or, you know, like, I know that kid, you're fine. You know,
right.
So there's a lot of kind of like pragmatism
mm-hmm.
that they share, you know, and also, you know, like, yeah, that's not something to feel so bad about. You know, like, listen to somebody else's story and you might recognize that you're not in such
a
bad situation. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So this is a question I wanted to talk about. Just in talking with this mom also, you know, she's like, part of me can relate to my daughter, but also part of me is like, you know, I want to be, and I know I experienced things when I was younger, but I would just be like, you know, sometimes you got to suck it up and just move forward. Like, there's going to be issues going on.
For
and,
sure.
And I don't want that to sound insensitive, but I know sometimes we think about that stuff like, oh, we just got to power through this. And yes. I feel like it's like, oh, you got to deal with it. You know, things aren't always, you know, rainbows and butterflies and you've got to like move on.
Right.
But I feel like, I don't know if it's now that we have to be a little bit more emotionally sensitive. I feel like there are a lot more, you know, mental health issues going on. There is so much more anxiety. And you really have to kind of be careful with what you're saying and also embracing somebody else's feelings, even Absolutely. If you can't connect on that level.
Oh, that Jen,
you is just that I'm like, did that all make sense?
That made so much sense. That it, you just described beautifully the tightrope walk that is parenting right now, really, because you do have to be emotionally sensitive because there is more mental illness. And, you know, if anybody, if you think your child is not suffering some degree of anxiety, I promise you he or she is. You know, like that's just, there's no way, nobody gets through all of the social media stuff and the academic and the social pressures unscathed. Yet, part of the job of parents is we want to raise competent, resilient people. So we have to have this element of suck it up and you're just going to have to do the hard thing too, you know? So there's this needle we have to thread between like, I'm with you 100%. You still got to go to school. You still got to do the thing. You got to give the talk in front of the class, you know? Mm-hmm. Like you're in the musical, you got to start singing. You're on the tennis court, you better swing, you know? So because when your child is off to the next thing, college or whatever it is, you do not want to send a child who feels like he or she is incompetent and not resilient out into the world. Because I work with those kids too. And that's a rough ride, you know, when you come back and you're like, wow, what just happened? I can't regulate myself. I'm drank too much. I smoked too much. I sat in my room alone. Mm-hmm. I stopped going to class. I stopped going to work. That happens too.
Well, yeah, if you don't feel like that you're confident to be able to go out there and make decisions for yourself or live on your own, you know, you can't always rely on your parents or, you know, they're always going to be there, but you need to be your own person also. But I think it's setting them up for the success to, you know, be able to do that. I mean, I know, you know, when I was younger, when I was in high school, I mean, I never did sports through high school. I did through junior high, but I wanted a car. So I had to work. Like I started working when I was 14, 15, I got my like worker's permit. And, but it was like, I, you know, those lessons I carry with me, I've carried them with me my whole life.
Sure.
And it's just made me, you know, a hard worker and responsible. And I understand, you know, the value of a dollar and that if I want to make things happen, I need to do them. I'm going to have support of other people who love me. But, you know, I have to kind of take that on my own.
Right. And your parents were raising an adult, right? And that's the idea, is we're not raising kids that we want to be dependent on us forever, right? Mm-hmm. We want to create these skills and these little wins. So your parents created those wins. You worked to work the job, and I don't know if you bought that car on your own. Or wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
They helped me out a little bit, but then I made all my payments and put money down, and I, you know, I was responsible for that. And I felt so good about it.
It feels good, right? That those first paychecks feel good, and all those, you know, so kids need those wins. So every once in a while, a child will be in front of me and they'll say, I really want to be home. I just want to play Fortnite, or I want to just go on Snapchat. And I'm not really a student and I'm not really a go-getter. And a lot of times parents will say, yeah, this just isn't my math child, or this isn't my athlete. Mm-hmm. And my plea to parents is, ooh, let's not limit our kids before we need to.
Right.
Yeah. Let's let them decide who they are and try on a couple of different things. And they may not be athletes and they may not be the math person, and they might, their skills might lay elsewhere. But sometimes we, in our own anxiety, we jump in and we make excuses when excuses don't need to be weighed. And
they're not necessary.
There's this diagnostic category called school refusal. Mm-hmm. And I have sat across from a 15-year-old who said, I've asked like, wow, you've missed like 40 days of school this year. What's the deal? Like, why are you missing school?
Yeah.
And the answer is, Dr. Duffy, I have school refusal. Look at my records. And it's circular, right? So that doesn't make any sense. But because we're willing to label kids in certain ways, we have to be really cautious with the labels, I guess is my point, because a label like school refusal, a label like ADHD sometimes, they can be empowering because it can be like, okay, thank goodness somebody else has this too. I'm not the only one. So that's great. But if that's their identity and that's all we give them to hang on to, then that's their excuse.
An excuse.
Yes.
Right there.
Yeah. I can't go to school. I have school refusal. Right. And of course you can go to school.
It's like, of course
you might be anxious.
Yes.
It might be hard, but you can do it.
I feel like the language is just so, it's key, and it's part of walking that, you know, fine line or that tightrope, because you do want to kind of be there, I think, to protect your child and jump in, and you might, you know, say certain things, but also like that, you need to let them kind of learn who they are and who they're becoming on their own, not limiting them. Even if they are, you know, not the best athlete or whatever, try it out,
yes.
Do it. Like, oh yeah, no, that's not my, you know, I think just there's negative self-talk sometimes when we don't realize it.
Right. Of course. Right.
You know, but it's like saying those things, then I feel like your child hears it and it's like, oh yeah, no, I'm not going to be good at that.
Yes.
Cause I've heard my parents say that,
absolutely.
You know, and it's like, well, you never know. And then they might not try and, you know,
because they already believe they can't.
Right.
Right. So we have to be careful with our words. You're right. The language is really important because that negative self-talk is often derivative of mom and dad saying, oh, you're not the math person, or you're not the violinist, or you're not the athlete.
And trying to be like, oh, that's okay.
But, yes. You know, right. Right. Right.
It's like not, it's not meant to be a negative, you know, I feel like, situation.
Oh, absolutely. And
it's not intentional.
In a moment of humility, I will call myself out. My wife and I tell this story frequently. We have one son. He's 23 now. But when he was 14 and he was a freshman in high school, he said, I'm going to join the swim team.
Mm-hmm.
And the swimmers started like 5 or 5:30 in the morning.
Okay.
And I remember saying, oh, yeah, you're not going to be able to do that, dude.
You're never going to get up that early.
That's not you, and it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Those guys work hard. That's a different breed. That's not a Duffy thing. And so we went to the first meeting, and the coach said, effectively said, don't do that. Like, give me your kid for 4 hours a day. Trust me, because you're never going to create that resilience in this way. Sometimes we have to trust another adult when we know, because we always wanted George to have this really comfortable, soft place to fall kind of life. So we weren't going to be the ones to create competence and resilience in him. We had to outsource.
Right,
And so know when you have to outsource too. Know if you're a powder puff parent like Julie and I, you got to send that kid somewhere else sometimes to get that toughness.
Well, even teaching, like I do a private with a six-year-old, a jujitsu private, and then I help one of my coaches teach his kids class. And the parents usually drop the kids off and leave, which I think is the best thing.
Brilliant.
Because when they're there, you know, I feel like, first of all, the kids get a little bit more, you know, they're self-conscious and they're, you know, not as focused because they're paying attention on their parent being there and watching. And then, you know, you have parents that kind of step in and say, oh, well, you know, maybe they shouldn't do that, or is that okay? And it's like, it's better for everybody if you just go.
I got this. You just go. Right.
We're good.
Right.
We're good here.
And there's that plea to the parents too, right? Like, oh, this is hard, mom. Like, or dad, you know, come and get me. Let's call this.
Yeah.
Whereas if mom and dad aren't there, not an option.
Right.
Yeah.
And then they go through it and it's fine and it's no problem.
Right.
You know, they don't even know. They don't realize it and it's great.
Yeah.
So with kids and all, you know, all these activities, and I'm sure there's a lot of athletic pressures too.
Oh yeah.
For kids. You know, I'd kind of like to touch on that a little bit. I feel like that might be a different topic also one day, since we can, you know, I think we can do another podcast.
We can always regroup. I would insist on it.
But, you know, what are some of these athletic pressures like? I just know in like training jujitsu and competing and just the courage and confidence that kind of takes and the stress that can put on kids.
Yeah.
But I feel like kids who are really trying to go for athletic scholarships and trying to carry a workload, I feel like that has to be something
it's so
really, really hard.
So difficult. Because the competition for athletic scholarships for D1 or D3 schools, it is so fierce and intense, and you really have to be an elite athlete to get anywhere in most any sport. And and the cool thing now, 20 years ago I was working with boys, young men who are going to be athletes. Now I work with, right now I happen to work with more girls and young women who are going for scholarships.
That's
and
amazing.
Athletic scholarships than guys, which is, this is the first year I can say that that's happened, but it's a real cool tipping point where it's like, it's about even now,
which is amazing.
Like, you know, Title IX works, man.
That's awesome.
That's cool. No, I love that. But it is this whole other set of massive stressors because it takes up hours of the day and they're not. For the kids going for the scholarships, for those elite athletes, they're not easy hours. These, you know, for some kids who are athletes, it's like my son was in the pool and those were hours away from his phone and away from homework. And
this is kind of where I wanted to segue into after, but continue on.
Yeah. But for these elite athletes, they're pushing hard. And those kids, that tends to be a personality thing. So if they're pushing hard in one area of their lives, they're probably pushing hard elsewhere too. So they need a soft place to fall. They need a little bit of downtime every day in order to regulate all that. Otherwise, I have worked with some type A kids who are just overstressed. And one young woman I worked with a couple years ago got to the pool for the first practice of her D1 scholarship and stepped up on the blocks, stepped off the blocks and said, "Oh, I'm not doing this. I'm done. I'm burned out." And she never got in the pool.
Stop it.
Yeah.
Did her scholarship get taken away?
Yeah, it did. Yep. And so she said,
"Something you work so hard for." Yeah. And you're just like, I'm
absolutely burned out. I cannot get in one more pool one more time. I've just burned myself out. And she's the same girl who 6 months before was in my office writing her college essay, and she came in with a blinking cursor in the top corner because she is a perfectionist in every way. Mm-hmm. And that first word was going to be the wrong word. So she couldn't get it down.
Wow.
Yeah. So we have to watch out for those kids too. So oftentimes we think we need to watch out for our kids who are like our basement dwelling, video game playing, weed smoking.
Right. But I feel like these kids can put so much pressure on themselves. Oh,
it's unbelievable.
And that is, it's like for striving for that perfection where it's like, that's not, so, you know, we think perfection is this wonderful thing, but I really feel like it's not. It's that journey of the progression and getting there and evolving.
Yeah.
And it's not, it's almost like you don't want to be perfect. Like there are flaws and we're all unique in those flaws.
Yes.
But it's that you learn so much on the way of getting to the goal that you want and on that journey. But that's so, I mean, people, I think, put that pressure on themselves so much.
Definitely.
Adults, kids, and with that kind of workload.
And with the developing mind, with the process that you're describing that is such a beautiful thing, right? Mm-hmm. This process working toward the best we can be, the best version of ourselves, is different than perfectionism, right? Which is, I have no patience. I need to be perfect right now.
Right.
And that's the teenage brain that's a perfectionist.
Well, I was going to say,
that.
I think with age, you kind of understand that journey a little bit more. But it's somebody, a teenager, it's like everything has to be done. All these pressures are building up and they have to be perfect on every level for everything.
Exactly. All these ducks need to be in a row. And if one thing's not perfect, then I'm awful. I mean, I hate to put it that way, but that's how a lot of these kids would describe it. It is binary, either or. Mm-hmm. I'm either where I need to be and I'm the right me, or I'm awful. I've failed. And it's just like that. You know what I mean? So think about the anxiety affiliated with that.
That has to be so hard to just watch that emotion in a teenager, in a person, just to kind of see it. I feel like we can just, you know, the mind is such a crazy thing. I don't like to use the word crazy, but it has a life of its own, really. And it's hard. I mean, you can't control it, and it can take us into so many different directions, and it can, you know, we can be our own worst enemies. But to watch somebody going through that where it's like, but no, you don't understand. Like, you are such an incredible person. Like, look at all you're achieving and accomplishing.
Right.
But it's like, it's not perfect. No, this is, I'm a horrible, like, I am a nobody because I can't do this.
Right. So briefly, if you want a little hint as to the fix of this kind of thing, it is introducing nuance. And if as a parent or as a friend, you have a story, your own story, be willing to share that. You don't be proud. Be willing to share your story where you had to stumble in order to be great, you know, or
so you
the best
relate.
Version of yourself. So you can relate. Yeah. You have to, and to create little wins and say, you know, like, And I usually tell my perfectionist kids, mm-hmm. your job this week is to fail miserably.
That's amazing. But yeah, I mean, that's a win. That's a great lesson.
And it takes that catastrophe out of it. This mm-hmm. is going to be awful if I fail. No, if you get a B, it's going to be fine.
Well, it's like, right. Yeah. You'll be okay. Well, it's that fear. It's facing that fear. Yeah. I think build these fears up in our head to be huge. And when we actually realize, like, what is the worst that can happen, or we experience it or write it down and kind of talk about it, let it out, we realize it's not that bad.
Yeah. We get out of our crisis thinking and we have very, very few crises in real life.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. So I really wanted to get into kind of some of the athletics a little bit, because I feel like sports, even for recreation, is a great way for, you know, kids to kind of unplug and get away from the technology.
Yes.
They are so, you know, synced in all the time, I feel like, to computers and laptops and iPads and phones. What do you suggest for kids to do? How do you tell parents to kind of regulate that a little bit, I guess? Because I feel like that's important. Like when we were younger, like when I was younger, we would just go hang out. I mean, we didn't have phones.
Right.
You know, I had maybe like a pager in high school for like a brief moment, and then went to the cell phone. But it's like, you know, we would play with friends. We'd go hang out. We'd go walk around. We'd go to the mall. Like we would talk. We would, you know, form these relationships.
Even
younger, just playing outside or, you know, using our imaginations. Like,
right.
how do you get kids to do that and just kind of, you know, be free?
Well, so you're talking about athletics, and I think about all the different extracurricular things that are available mm-hmm. to kids, and I like them all. I like groups and plays and clubs and orchestra.
Oh, yes, anything.
All that stuff. But there is nothing like moving your body and feeling and knowing you have agency over that, right? Mm-hmm. Like I'm not a very fast runner, but tomorrow I might be faster than I am today, right? So you feel this little difference, right? And I'm in control of this. Mm-hmm. And any athletic field, pool, court is a bit of a sanctuary in that you are away from every screen when you are engaged in that, right?
So absolutely.
And you're sweating and you're focused on something completely different. Your mindset is completely different mm-hmm. and it utilizes a whole different set of skills, and the synapses are firing in completely fresh ways.
Yeah.
And you're wearing that body and mind down in a really healthy way mm-hmm. instead of agitating it in this anxious way, just staring at these screens. Right?
Yes.
Looking for something that is fairly static to change. Mm-hmm. So I love everything about athletics. And I don't know the kid who can't be an athlete, you know, the able-bodied child. But even I've worked with some disabled kids who are amazing athletes, you know, wheelchair basketball players. And, you know, so there is a way to get that body going.
There's a way to move for sure.
Yes.
And, you know, everybody can find something. And I mean, I always encourage it, just, even adults. It's just, you know, to be able to, we know that if we don't have movement or mobility in our lives as we get older, especially, it's more and more important. We just need to move some way somehow. But it's finding something that you're passionate about or you love or you enjoy doing.
There's that too, right? Right.
You know, because
we've painted, and you know this better than I do, but mm-hmm. we painted this movement thing as a chore. Right. I'm going to walk on this treadmill and I hate it so much. And, you know, but I had cake last night, so I have to do this, you know, to mm-hmm. balance it out. And I think we've to find something that you like doing physically and enjoy. That's critical, right? You
Absolutely.
Know, because you want it to be a lifestyle.
Right.
Part of your
life.
That's
the key. I mean, you should enjoy moving and getting outside. I'm like, even if it's going for a walk outside in nature, like get outside, breathe in the fresh air, leave the phone at home, you know, just enjoy something that you're doing. Because that's going to make you move more, and that's going to encourage you to do that. And then, you know, you can find these groups of people that are kind of outside of maybe that school group or whatever, but it's a support group and you guys all have, you know, the same thing that you like. And you can get along, and it's just a new family.
And if you're looking for a natural antidepressant, anti-anxiety agent,
nothing better.
Nothing better than movement. Nothing.
I mean, that was one of the reasons, you know, I started jujitsu. It was because I couldn't, you know, you step on the mat, you can't focus on anything else because right. you can get choked out. I mean, your arm, you know, I always have to talk about jujitsu, but it always comes
that.
Back
you
to
can
it
get
somehow.
Choked out. That does have my attention. would...
You can go to sleep for a little bit, just saying, in a very safe environment, as I'm suggesting kids should do jujitsu too. But it's, you know, you have to be present.
Yes.
And focus.
Yep.
Because otherwise you can get hurt.
Well, and the beauty, I love that you said you have to be present there. Mm-hmm. So, our kids are, and all of us, we are getting worse at being present in a moment.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, one thing about movement is, you know, so I run. And okay. that's zen and bliss for mm-hmm. me. And I hate it as well. Like I have mixed feelings about it, but I'm there with mm-hmm. every step. I don't listen to music. I make sure I'm just like listening to the rhythm of my breathing and I am present for those moments. And I know when my son was in the pool, he would describe like, you know, I have to like know the stroke and I have to pay attention to the lane line and I have to know where this next guy is.
Right.
And, you know, like there's with any athletic endeavor, you're paying attention in a different way. You're there.
Yeah.
You're present.
You have to be.
Yeah.
And that is, it's just such a, I think when you're done, you know, when I get off the mats or you've, you know, finished your training for the day, you kind of, that's the best time where you feel so good about yourself and you're tired and you're sweating and you're like, you're just so stress free.
Yes. And so tired is such a dirty word, but the proper,
in the best way.
The best way, right? I mean, yes, you come out, you're sweated,
feeling.
You're exhausted. I like when young people come to my office and drop on the couch because they're coming back from practice.
Right.
You know, and they're
sure.
just wiped out
yeah.
in the best way. I love that.
Because they don't have that, you know, they don't have that anxiety and they're just
right.
like relaxed.
Yes. And you can see it. You can see it in the body language, mm-hmm. just dropping on the couch like, oh man. And you know, the dirt on the knees, it's like fabulous. Excellent. Make this office
yes.
just a mess.
Yes, that's awesome. So would you encourage like families and parents to kind of instill something where it's, you know, rules about not having technology? Is that even possible? Like to have that family time that is critical where people can't, you know, the kids can't be on their phones or have, you know, any
Absolutely.
iPods or iPads with them and all of that good stuff.
Yeah, I love that. I like having that kind of a rule. It's, you have to be careful how you lay that out because mm-hmm. if you say, we're going to have an hour a day where you do that, you are setting yourself up to have arguments. If you say, we're going to keep phones down at my house, we keep phones downstairs.
Okay.
And a bunch of my clients' homes, you know, everybody's phone stays downstairs. So mm-hmm. no phones in bedrooms. That's a great way to have that rule.
Oh, that is great.
And to your point, about like exercise and movement mm-hmm. and what we were talking about with just activity, extracurricular stuff. The best way to do it is to fill in the rest of your life. So we can talk all day long about limiting screens, mm-hmm. but what you really want to do is keep busy a lot of your day, right? And include a little meditation, a little calm and quiet and silence in there,
yes.
right? Yeah, because our days are loud. Our kids' days are loud. There is stimuli. We're overwhelmed, mm-hmm. all of us. We are overwhelmed and stressed and anxious. And until we sit with nothing, we don't even know it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's so important even with, you know, for kids. It's I'm co-writing a book with a friend of mine and we're talking about organizing time and goal setting and really how you have to kind of plan for success, literally. But that's just the day and age that we're in. And it's like, if you want to get something done, you need to look at that goal and then you need to break down steps yearly, monthly, weekly, daily, what you're going to do. But
protecting time for your things. Yes.
Absolutely. Right. And you know, I feel like we do tend to waste a lot of time. So it's kind of looking at the schedule and being like, okay, what am I doing? Just scrolling on the screen or, you know, watching Netflix, whatever it may be. And that could be self-care time too.
Sure.
So I don't want to take that away completely. But, you know, even for kids, it's scheduling that in. If it's 5 minutes, just having that quiet time to yourself.
Absolutely.
I think it's so important. It doesn't have to be 30 minutes or an hour. I think that's where people kind of get a little overwhelmed and they're like, I'm not going to have this time.
Absolutely. Right.
But if it's 5 minutes, that builds up. you know, each day over each week. And it's like, I think you can feel just a little bit more present. You can breathe a little bit more. And I, you know, that too, with kids, adults, it's like just breathing. When you get anxious, just, you know, take in three deep breaths, you know, and just enjoy that exhale and let everything go and out. And I feel like you can just be a lot more calm.
I actually practice that with every kid I work with, no matter what they're suffering from, mm-hmm. is like, we're going to sit here and breathe for just a minute. And follow me, you know, like we're just going to breathe nice and easy just for a minute. And a lot of the kids I work with download Headspace or Calm or one of these apps that just has like these really quick little meditations in there. But it's like just getting quiet with themselves.
It's just, so important. And so many people don't breathe right.
We breathe to stay conscious, right? We breathe just shallow enough
to stop breathing.
Anxious, right? But we don't breathe. We really don't. You're right. And that's another thing that the athlete knows, right? Is that like, you know, if you're moving, you have to draw in a deeper breath than you do. So you get in the practice of doing that and you know how to tap that a little easier than you do if you're just on the couch.
I mean, in jiu-jitsu, so many times I'll have people come in and, you know, when they're just starting, it's like they want to hold their breath when they get into a position and it's like, you got to breathe.
Oh, that's like, me. If I've ever tried anything like jiu-jitsu, oh my God. Yeah, I freeze up and stop breathing.
Maybe we should have you come try. Have you tried jiu-jitsu?
I have not.
Oh, okay. See, I try and get every guest that I have on to come in and try it. But it's really about being comfortable in the uncomfortable. And, you know, in a bad situation or bad spot, it's like really just focusing on your breath. That will get you through it. But it's like you have to just breathe. Then you can kind of figure out, okay, this is what I need to do now. This is how I can get out. This is what I can do, whatever life situation it may be. But just taking that breath, it just makes you more calm. And I think you can focus a little bit better.
What a brilliant metaphor for everything we do in life. Get a little comfortable with the uncomfortable. Breathe in deep. And you can problem solve. You can hear yourself thinking you can problem solve. It's jujitsu, of course.
That's the answer to all the problems.
Clearly.
It's jujitsu.
I didn't know that was our punchline, but it is jujitsu, of course.
See how we just kind of like brought all of that in. That's amazing.
Amazing.
So I want you to tell us a little bit about your practice, your services, your patients you kind of specialize in. I know you work with a lot of teenagers, but tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I am a recovering CPA.
Okay.
Yeah, I was an accountant years ago. Yeah.
That I did not know.
Yes, it's a very weird fact about myself. But in a way, it's instructive because I can tell my clients, you always have a next chapter. You have the option of changing.
I love that. Yes. I love it.
So I've been practicing for 23 years. And I fell into working with teenagers and parents. So that's more than half of my practice. I also work with individual adults and couples. Mm-hmm. My office is in the western suburbs of Chicago. And I am downtown sometimes too. My first book is called The Available Parent. I write about parenting despite myself. I want to write a novel or something and I find myself writing about parenting. So my second book is...
You have so much good advice. Well,
let's hope so.
I mean, you're writing a second book. That's amazing.
Yeah. The second book fell out of a blog I wrote that was briefly called You Were Never a Teenager. And it was something a 16-year-old boy said to his dad, his dad was trying to be empathic and said, son, I've been there. I know what it's like. Mm-hmm. And his son said, no, you were never a teenager. Not like this. And he explained everything we're talking about here.
Yeah,
and
it's different.
Dad was like, ooh, I was never a teenager. I have a lot to learn from you. And so...
Wow.
Son became teacher to father very quickly.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, and I think that has to happen for most of us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When does that come out?
So that comes out either late August or early September once we get a cover that we all, that the publisher and the editor and my wife and I all like.
Okay, awesome. Well, that's the fun part.
That's fun. Like, the hard part's done.
The hard part is over.
Yes.
What is your website?
My website is drjohnduffy.com. So you can find everything about me, including my appearances here at WGN and my podcast and this podcast. I'll put a link up there.
Awesome. Thank you for that. And people can follow you on social media?
Yeah. Let's see. On Twitter, I'm at Dr. John Duffy, and same on Instagram, and I'm Dr. John Duffy on Facebook.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you again for being here today. I just think this, it's a beautiful relationship, I think, that can grow from here.
I think this is
a great connection. And I definitely, I know we kind of we're a little bit all over the place on this topic because there's so many different things to discuss. But I feel like, you know, we might have some future episodes coming out where we can kind of just, you know, pinpoint some topics and talk about so many things. Cause I feel like you and I can just talk about some amazing things.
We could probably sit in here for another couple hours. Yes, that's probably true.
For sure. So thank you again
for coming today.
And to all you listeners out there, any topics or guests that you would like to hear me have on my podcast, send me a message at Jen Z. That's on my Facebook page, or at JZ Beauty and the Beast on my Instagram. I will talk to you guys next week. Thanks. Bye.